Welcome to the Fuller Money Audio Commentary. This is David Fuller on Friday, the 4th of January, recording at 8:54 p.m. That's Greenwich Mean Time. Now, this being Friday, this is the big picture long-term outlook for the various asset classes. But first, let's have a quick review of the week. This was the week in which I think quite a few investors began to realize that the Fed really was behind the curve of events. Now, as an aside, I know I've banged on about that rather a lot recently, perhaps too much, some of you may feel, but I do maintain that it is an extremely important issue. And what the stock market does is not determined by some imagined fates, but policy, central bank policy, it will always have a big influence. And I've often said that bull markets don't die of old age, that they're assassinated, usually by central banks, and that's usually by too tight monetary policy. And this time, well, that's the case this time, because the Fed is behind the curve of events, but I won't mention that again in this broadcast, at any rate. Now, what else to mention here in the highlights? The U.S. contagion, has certainly spilled over into the usual candidates, the European markets. Today, for instance, so the Dow's down 250 points as I speak, and the FTSE index was up over 50 points, I believe, at one stage. And led, of course, by the resources shares once again, as we saw yesterday. But then Wall Street resumed its steep slide, and FTSE closes out with a 130-point decline. So all the European markets were hard hit by this, and we also and have been this week for the most part, and we also saw Japan get absolutely clobbered when it came back from the post-holiday trading, falling 4% on the Nikkei. Now, the Fuller Money themes have held up astonishingly well against that background, and so they should. They're lower risk, they have far better fundamentals. They are related to secular bull market themes, and I expect those to run and run. But needless to say, there is a short-term risk, at least, of contagion from the Wall Street leash. Now, in terms of government bonds, mostly firm here this week. More on those shortly. The U.S. dollar has had a week, 5 trading days, down a little bit further here today, and although it's been a bit been choppy in the last couple of days. Precious metals have had a good week, but are experiencing a bit of profit taking in here today, catching a little bit of contagion. More on that in a moment. Oil's off its highs, and did test the $100 level, as you know, earlier this week. Currently at 97.78 as I speak. And agricultural commodities were mostly strong, but encountering a little bit of profit taking in here today, although not corn, which closed up by just a fraction. Okay, so what's going on here overall as far as these stock markets are concerned? Well, I'm gonna hate all that throat clearing. I'm just gonna take the headset off for a moment and have a drink of water. I don't know why I have such a scratchy voice in here. I'm afraid it's going to be a little bit of a problem during this audio. I have had a wee bit of a bug. Nothing to worry about or to trouble me, other than when I'm trying to do some of the audios. But What's going on here overall? Well, we've had all kinds of reports and theories about uncoupling or the fact that we do not get uncoupling. Well, certainly we've seen a stock market uncoupling. Now, in a global or in a world of globalization, we're not going to get more economic uncoupling. We will get more actual coupling. But the big difference this time around is that we have gone from a unipolar to a world polar, to a multipolar, unipolar to a multipolar world, and that Asia is currently the engine of global GDP growth. That's been the big change in the last 5 or 6 years, maybe a bit longer. And that is a critically important change. So while these markets are inevitably going to be coupled economically, we can have an environment, as we are seeing, where the US economy, the focal point of global risk for some time, as I've been saying, sadly, and the Europe zone, which is very intertwined with the US economies, underperform. And we're also seeing Japan underperform, but the economies that have really been strong all along during the last 5, 6 years, Chindia, Brazil, and much of Asia, really, the Middle Eastern economies, Russia, you see how well they're still doing. Now, they will slow if the US tips into recession, and that does remain a risk. I've been very much of the camp that said that the US would skirt by just avoiding a technical recession, but I've also said that the domestic economy in the US was in deep recession, and that consumer economy, and that it was really the multinationals, particularly those that sold heavily into the Asian region, that might just keep the US economy out of a technical recession defined as 2 consecutive quarters of negative GDP growth, with the help of that stronger overall global economy. The Fed's reticence to act and to read correctly, I think, consumer and investor and corporate sentiment here, and sort of fiddle around with various different monetary measures that seem academic. They aren't, but they seem that way, and they don't address the immediate concerns. That, to me, increases the risk that the U.S. does go into a recession, and that would slow global would obviously slow global GDP growth even further. But the phenomenon that we're seeing that's perhaps more interesting is that Owen and I have long described global stock markets, well, markets generally, not just stock markets, all the markets that investors can choose from, we've described it as a global beauty contest. Now, if you have growth underperforming in an important region of the global economy, it's hardly surprising, even though there's these economies are coupled, that the disparity is such that, I mean, when I say coupled, that doesn't mean that China is threatened with any form of recession, far from it. But maybe China's growth comes from 11% down to 8 or 9%, worst case scenario. I don't think that would displease China at all, and that would look pretty fantastic, still, would it not? And so when investors look around and see growth slowing in the US, seeing all those banking problems spreading over into Europe, it's hardly surprising that they vote with their feet. I'm just glad that the Fuller money themes have been in the right areas: global infrastructure, Asian growth led by Chindia, commodities in general. That was led many years ago by the industrial resources, with the agricultural commodities coming on gangbusters in recent years. The only things that haven't moved here recently, well, no doubt somebody will turn up something else, but main ones that haven't moved here recently are livestock prices. At least not the cattle and pig meat contracts out of Chicago. And that's partly because feed prices are so high, so that's increased slaughter rates. But I would assume that in time, that we will also see those meat prices rise as well. So again, these have, but I digress. I was talking about the fuller money themes of resources, and gold, silver, platinum, of course, in that list as well. So while the while there is some contagion economically for the rest of the world from the U.S. slowdown, it is nowhere near as great as it would have been in previous decades. If this had happened in the 90s or in the 80s or in the 70s or any other time in the last century, if, in other words, if we'd seen the U.S. economy so vulnerable at any time in the last century, I think it would have had a paralytic effect on economies elsewhere, and we'd have a global recession for sure, including the U.S., because it wouldn't have the benefit of the multinational companies doing so well, selling into stronger regions. But that is not the case any longer, and so the effect is greatly lessened. And then, to repeat a point very briefly, the interesting phenomenon is in the global beauty contest, people go for relative safety. And I've argued for a long time that people really had risks. So many people had risks the wrong way around. You'd mention emerging markets, you mentioned China, you mentioned India, people say, "Oh, risky, risky." Well, as I've said before, if risk means a strong economy, a current account surplus, a strong currency, then, I really don't know what risk means. So that's where the fuller money themes have concentrated, in those sectors and in those countries that have really been benefiting over the last number of years, and that's where we will remain. What's the extent of the contagion? Well, while Wall Street is falling, we're all aware of that leash effect, and it's not as strong again as it was in previous decades, for the same reasons as I just mentioned, largely involving the multipolar world. But it certainly is a headwind, and for instance, we saw today the J.P. Morgan Fleming India Fund surge to a new all-time high. Great news. It couldn't hold it because Wall Street turned so weak in the afternoon, so that gave up those gains. We saw India's stock market hit a new all-time high right across the board on the indices in here today. An amazing performance against what's going on in many other areas. Now, that may well be challenged. I would expect that to be challenged on Monday morning. But my feeling overall is that the fuller money themes, they are not immune to contagion. They are not immune to the Wall Street leash effect, but they will fall very often less, and they, more importantly, they will bounce back more quickly. That's been the case all along, and I don't see any reason really why that should change. Now, I've talked about the really bombed out areas of Wall Street as becoming interesting, technically, in terms of long-term investment potential. But I've also emphasized the fact that we were very likely to see a lengthy convalescence, and I want to stress that point about the lengthy convalescence, which would mean at minimum a number of months of base formation development in the financial sector, in the property sector, in the house building sector, and in the retail sector. All these sectors that have been hit so hard, a lengthy period of convalescence. And that means that I find those areas, again, they're interesting, but there are lots of things that are interesting that I think of as sort of being on the shelf, that we sort of keep an eye on them. But interesting doesn't mean that this investor, at any rate, wishes to go rushing in and buy. I won't try to catch the low. What I'll want to do is see the base formations develop, see these sectors turn from relative weakness to relative strength, and then I'll happily come in, and they'll probably be 30% or more off the lows, but then they should hopefully have a very considerable upside potential over the medium to longer term. At this stage, I'm not at this stage, my interest is purely academic, put it that way. And what else to mention here? These government bonds, briefly, they are going to stay very firm while there's so much concern over the U.S. economic weakness. And this again indicates that central banks just have got it all wrong on the short-term inflationary pressures. I've said repeatedly that this credit, so-called credit crisis, a crisis of confidence regarding credit, has slowed the overall cycle and lengthened it. How much has it lengthened it by, or how much has it slowed it by? Well, that remains to be seen. How much has it lengthened it by? That remains to be seen as well, but I would have thought at least a year. And had we not had this problem emanating from Wall Street, had we not had this problem, then I think what we would have seen is the global economy overheating and central banks continuing to ratchet up interest rates with a global bear market probably developing sometime in that 2009-2010 period, possibly even earlier. The fact that we have seen this problem, and it is a problem still unfolding, so we haven't passed the nadir here in terms of the damage that it's doing to the stock markets most affected. What this has done is, of course, create some very bearish moves in the weak areas. And you flip through those US and European stock market indices now, and they're not a pretty sight overall, as I'm sure you've seen if you're in the least bit interested in those areas. And the more damage that's done, the more that will actually lengthen the overall cycle, because the more central banks will have to lower interest rates. That's what we will see during the course of the year. And excuse me, long-dated government bonds are hammering home the message that inflation is not the big problem right now. Yes, of course, there's lots of commodity price inflation that's coming at the moment mostly from energy and from the particularly emotive food prices. But as I've emphasized on so many occasions, this is not a nut that central banks can crack with tighter monetary policy. And there are rapidly developing deflationary pressures that need to be addressed. Okay. But when government bond prices, watch the government bond prices, well, or the yields, when government bond prices next go into downward trends, then you will know that, if it isn't already abundantly obvious, that investors are concluding that the worst of the economic slowdown is over, and therefore they will become more concerned about inflationary prices. Meanwhile, I don't think bonds offer that great a safe haven because they don't offer that much value. But again, they'll probably stay steady in here for a while longer. How much longer? Few weeks, few months, perhaps. At least a few weeks, probably a few months. Now, in looking at currencies, hugely important area right now. The US dollar, I think, is predictably finding a little bit of support. US dollar index, I should say, is predictably finding a little bit of support near its upside breakout point from a small trading range. That's when it moved above the 76.20 level. So right around this sort of 76 area, I have been looking for a little bit of actual ranging, but I do think that the US dollar index will then head back down and retest its low at least. And I don't expect, a lot of people have been forecasting a strong dollar recovery this year. I'm not among them. I was forecasting a medium-term technical rally and fairly lengthy ranging phase, and I will stick with that. Why not a strong dollar recovery? Because these US interest rates are going to have to come down, and that is not a favorable trend for the currency. And I think the US rates will come down at least as much as anywhere else. And it's widely known that the US needs a soft currency to improve the current account figures. And they may not improve all that much. What with the improvement that we're seeing is fewer imports, and the exports have held up quite well. But, and here's the problem, Mr. Bernanke, that if you don't help to shore up the US economy, and psychology is very important on this, if all the consumers take fright and a big chunk of business takes fright and people just sit on their hands for a few months, bingo, you're in a deep recession. On the other hand, provide the right leadership, the right monetary stimulus, and the right leadership means a certain amount of high-profile commentary, sort of thing Bernanke did back in 2002 when he said deflation, why it won't happen here, wrote a paper with a title of that name. That was the leadership then that was very important and helped to stem those deflationary pressures. And that's the type of leadership that has been sadly lacking here more recently. Now, forget exactly where I was going with that point. This is all off the cuff. It's always all off the cuff on the audios, but the point will come back to me. No doubt in time. But I was talking about currencies, and with the US needing a weaker dollar, needing to produce plenty of liquidity. And yes, the point I was making is that the weaker the US economy is, the lower tax receipts are actually going to be. And if you have lower tax receipts and all the spending that one would expect normally during an election year, plus the military effort, and then you get the budget deficit widening overall. So what you're saving on the current account deficits in terms of fewer imports and exports mostly holding up, you're giving back in terms of the growing budget deficit, and the US dollar bulls will not like that. So that's another factor that can weigh on the US dollar. Resources currencies should hold up comparatively well, although central banks in those countries will try to undermine that strength from time to time. But the resources currencies, for the most part, have the higher interest rates, and that will attract investors, as will the strong growth behind the currency due to the resources super cycle. And the Asian currencies are outstandingly attractive. They're all managed, so they appreciate slowly, but it's been pretty steady overall, and I expect that appreciation to continue over the next many years. The one area where currencies are genuinely undervalued is Asia. A lot of people are saying, well, the US dollar is undervalued on a purchasing power parity basis. Yes, on the basis of that one factor alone, the US dollar is undervalued. But if purchasing power parity was all that counted, then the Zimbabwean, whatever it is, would be the strongest currency in the world instead of a Weimar situation. Okay, precious metals. I have talked recently about the possibility of a momentum play. The Achilles heel for precious metals in here, the main one, I suspect, is will they be immune to contagion selling? That's the question that a lot of people are probably, with an interest in the sector, are probably asking themselves. In other words, can Wall Street's current weakness drag down the precious metals? And the answer has to be yes, it can, but I don't, th and it is certainly a headwind. But remember, when we saw precious metals slump with every down day on Wall Street, for the most part, that was following that April, May 2006 peak in the gold price, after which it went into that very, very long-ranging consolidation phase. Now, we don't have that type of environment now. The upward trends have been reaffirmed, and therefore I would expect precious metals to be more resilient. And again, in the global beauty contest, people see the momentum play that's occurring in the food commodities, and it's hardly surprising that they look at some of these other commodity markets that might also be candidates for a momentum play. And they look at all the underlying support and the long-term trends on those precious metals, and the fact that they had a pretty dull year between that April, big April sell-off in 2006, and it really wasn't up until about August that they of this year that they sprang to life again. So, following that big long consolidation of over a year, it's hardly surprising that precious metals are attracting more interest. And the industrial metals, they all declined in here today, having started off the day with some solid gains, but those were kiboshed by the Wall Street sell-off. And I think that, again, precious metals have held up somewhat better. I think the difference is that there is a lot less confidence as far as those industrial metals are concerned. I think the ones that have been hard hit, that's particularly nickel. I'm talking about over the last few months, hard hit, particularly nickel and zinc and copper. I think that they're probably going to appreciate quite a bit in the 2008, probably into 2009, nine period. And watch though for, if I'm right on that forecast, you'll see some backwardations reappear. That would be quite an important signal. We get a very interesting bit of data coming out when the USDA, I believe, releases its figures on the US grain and bean crops on, I think it's on the 12th of this month. And then we will know at that point whether it was a case of buy the rumor, sell the news, or whether even the bulls have underestimated the extent to which those crop results are downgraded, and we get a little bit of a blow off. I'm just playing it with a tight stop on my one position there, which is in corn. And crude oil, well, $100 is a psychological barrier, obviously. I would expect it to mess around, range for a while, and then resume its overall upward trend. Meanwhile, Wall Street's closeout has been pretty weak, down almost 2 on the Dow, down almost 2.5 on the S&P, down a whopping 3.77 on the NASDAQ Composite Index. So there's your problem, Mr. Bernanke. What rabbits are you tempted to pull out of the hat? It's not that you don't have any. Meanwhile, have a great weekend, and I look forward to covering all of this again with you next week. All the best.